Hi, thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide. And today my guest on this podcast is Michelle Danner. Michelle is an award-winning acting coach, film director, and founder of the Michelle Danner Acting Studio in Los Angeles. She trained with Stella Adler and Uta Hagen, and actors she's worked with both privately and on set include Chris Rock, Gerard Butler, Seth MacFarlane, Penelope Cruz, Salma Hayek, James Franco, Christian Slater, Zooey Deschanel, Gabrielle Union, Jennifer Coolidge, and it goes on. There are many more. The Michelle Danner Acting Studio features an extremely broad offering of classes for kids and teens and adults, including scene study, audition for film and TV, improv, film script analysis, private coaching, and much more. She's also founding and artistic director of the Edgemar Center for the Arts. Michelle, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
How did you get your start in this business?
Well, my dad was an agent in New York at the William Morris Agency, which is now the William Morris Endeavor, and they had asked him to open up the branch, the William Morris branch in Paris. So when I was a year old, we moved to Paris, and my dad opened up the William Morris Agency, and I grew up in Paris, where he would bring home, you know, lots of singers and actors and, you know, very well-known people. So I would have dinners with Edith Piaf and Maurice Chevalier and Sammy Davis and a wonderful list of great people. And I don't know if that's what inspired me to take acting classes and to go to the Conservatory of Paris and to study, you know, French literature and writers. And I ended up doing plays and plays by Molière and Jean-Paul Sartre and Jean Nouy. And I have a lot of my upbringing was in Europe, and I traveled all over Europe. And I just had a great, great upbringing in the theater. And when I moved, when I was, a teenager, and I moved back to New York City, I started to study with Uta Hagen and Stella Adler and Herbert Bergdorf and many other wonderful teachers in New York. And that's what started me. You know, I was always very fascinated, loved the theater, fascinated with writers, fascinated with, you know, great performances. And just always studied, and then to this day continue to do that every day of my life.
That's nice to hear. I think a lot of people feel like once you've hit what feels like success, you're good. You don't have to study anymore.
No, I studied every single day. As a matter of fact, I just saw the movie, you know, we were talking about The Three Billboards. It's got a long title, which is great, in Missouri. And, you know, I loved it. I love that movie. And, you know, I immediately downloaded the script. I wanted to read the screenplay and go back and look at it again. And
how did you download the script? I know that if I don't ask that, there's going to be a lot of people wondering.
It's available on the internet. A lot of the Oscar movies that are nominated this year for Best Picture. You can find them on the internet. I always go back to the script. And a lot of times, I mean, if it's Aaron Sorkin that's written it, which you'll see on the shooting script, will be identical almost to what's on the screen. But a lot of other scripts, it's interesting, you know, how the conception of the script is different somewhat than what ends up being on the screen, which makes it true what they say. You know, there's a movie that is on the page, there's a movie that gets shot, and then there's a movie that gets made in the editing room. So it's always interesting to see what the intent was for something and then see the realization. And judge for yourself, what do you think, you know, if it was better or, you know, if you liked better what was on the page. But it's always interesting, the decisions, I think, that get made.
I agree completely. I'm a total geek. I love reading a script. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that we are not alone, the two of us. So, okay, everybody, look online for scripts for movies you love and learn from them, break them down. So you've worked with some incredibly successful actors, and you've been named Best LA Acting Coach by Backstage Reader's Choice. What do you think explains your success?
Well, I've been teaching for 28 years. I think I blocked that out for a second there. 28 years, that's a long time. You know, I think it's consistency. It's like everything else. It's the thing that I teach, that I say that if you're, you know, consistent, you're looking for longevity in anything, you know, any craft that you undertake, you're looking to have longevity. And if you show up day after day and you put one foot, you know, in front of the other and you do it, you know, that's a lot of it. You know, I'm very interested in, I was always, if you had, I always tell my students, if you had a video camera on me, when I sat in Stella Adler's class when she taught script interpretation and she talked about all those writers, and I always tell everyone to read her two books, you know, about script analysis on Chekhov, Ibsen, and Strindberg, and the other one on the great playwrights. And I was there taking copious notes and just, you know, being like a sponge. You know, to me, the craft of acting, I start the Golden Box class that I teach with three questions. What makes a great actor? What is great acting? What's a great acting moment? And I've always been fascinated with the answers to those questions. And I have a relentless pursuit in me to really find the answer through performances, through readings. You know, I'm constantly searching. So I don't stop studying myself. And, you know, if, for instance, I have a class tonight, and I taught all weekend the Golden Box, and last night Breaking Into the Industry. When I walk into class, you know, I also walk in with the energy of what I just learned that day, that week. You know, I wake up in the morning, I read, I watch. I just watched something now, you know, it's very, before I came here, very disturbing. Oh. The assassination of Gianni Versace. I don't know if you've seen it.
Oh, I don't think I can watch. I don't think I can watch that.
Tough to, but really wonderful performances and so well done. So well done. And there's a lot of, we know this year, there's a lot of great movies that are up for Oscars, great performances. So there's a lot to see. There's a lot to study. And I think partly, you know, people respond to that. You know, you're constantly taking it in, and I'm looking forward to going to see some shows next week in New York. That's what it's really about. I always tell my students that they have to be like little vampires. They have to go suck the blood to stay inspired and creative and excited about their potential.
I love the little vampires metaphor. I mean, people often say that, you know, people should be like sponges absorbing and soaking things up, but the vampire thing is so much better because it's more active.
That's right.
Go out and get that blood.
That's right.
So I understand that your school teaches Meisner technique, Strasberg's method, Stella Adler, and Stanislavski's system, and Uta Hagen, and the Chekhov technique. That's a lot. Can you break down the basics of those techniques a little bit and just explain why you think it's important to have more than one approach to playing a role? Because in my experience, a lot of schools, they take one of those and they run with it. And you're covering all these bases.
So, you know, I was in class the day that Lee Strasberg died. Mm-hmm. And he said, a man of the theater died today. There will be a minute of silence for him. And then after that was over, she said, I'm paraphrasing, she says, a minute of silence. And then she said to everyone, it'll take 100 years to undo the harm that he has done.
Wow.
And I thought to myself in that moment, you know, they all disagreed with each other so intently. And I personally always wanted to run from dogma. I never believed in anything that was dogmatic. I never believed that there could just be one way to do anything. As a matter of fact, I went to teach in Russia a few years ago, and I was brushing up on my Stanislavski on the plane and some other books because I thought, oh, those Russian actors are going to get me on something I'm not going to know. And you know, and I started to read Stella and Lee Strasberg and Stanislavski and Michael Chekhov, and I thought to myself, you know, they all make sense. They all bring up really good points. They all have great concepts here. You have to ultimately read all of it and find out what's going to work the best for you, you know, and it's going to change based on what project you're working on, whether it's stage, whether it's a TV show, a movie, where you're at in your life. So it behooves you, it behooves the actor of today, you know, this generation, the older generation, to just keep reading and learning and put together, you know, that golden box, that toolbox, where you put tools that you feel are the tools that work the best for you, and then the lessons, the tools that you learn when you're on set, when you're working on stage, and then the life lessons, those tools that you learn, all of those go in the box. And so it's not necessarily just, you know, there's no cookie cutter technique that works for everyone. I mean, we just talked about a few kids. You know, I've always sent them not to, you know, to schools that to me feel, you know, dated, but to progressive schools. Let's all come to the middle and you're all going to get the same thing. Everybody's different. And certainly when it comes to an actor, actors are unique and they are different. You know, there's not 10 actors can be taught exactly the same way. But what you can learn is, you know, these are all the ways. This is what Michael Chekhov talked about. You know, this is what Stanislavski was the grandfather. He's the one that posed those questions. What is great acting? And in all his books, you know, An Actor Prepares and Building a Character, he, you know, analyzed exactly what went into making an incredible performance. And when Stella Adler and Lee Strasberg went to Paris and studied with him, someone was smoking because they all heard different things, and they came back and they started to do. But I thought it made for a good melodrama amongst all of them to disagree so profoundly with each other. They all had, you know, such visceral responses,
violently almost.
Yes, and you had Bobby Lewis trying to do those lectures to enlighten all these confused actors running around New York City. So should we use our imagination? Should we use our personal life? Do we wait for the feeling first? Do we play an intention first? Which is, you know, what Stella would say, you know, play the intention. You know, Lee Strasberg and the method said, you know, work for the emotions. Stanislavski had the ship, you know, with the metaphor, and the self was, you know, if you're not connected to a sense of self, then you can't really, really play it. You have to make it personal. So, and then when Michael Chekhov was in Stanislavski's class, he did this whole, you know, exercise that he pretended, I can't remember if it was the loss of someone that he was crying over. And then he looked at everyone in class and he said, I just made it up. Mm-hmm. This was right out of my imagination, which, you know, upset Stanislavski, and he told him never come back to my class again because he proved him wrong. He proved that you could use your imagination and it could be as if it had happened to you and it could be real. So, you know, Stella mostly obviously stood for using your imagination because she would yell at people and say, you're boring. And Lee Strasberg would say, use your personal life because that's going to make you go deeper. And I believe in both. You know, I love François Truffaut, a French filmmaker, said the more universal you make it, the more personal it becomes. Yeah. You know, and you'll know where you can go and tap into things that are personal to you. Sometimes you don't want to touch it. I was doing this play years ago called Bright Ideas by Eric Kobel. The character I was playing had a monologue where she talked about having a nightmare of watching her child drown in a pool. Now, I have a child. I have a pool. And I thought to myself, well, I'm not using my child and putting the image of my child in that pool. And then one night in performance, I saw my child at the bottom of the pool. And I didn't push it away. I just went with it. That night, I took it a notch deeper. The following night, I didn't have to remember the face of my child in that pool, but I already, because my body remembered it and my body had muscle memory, I already had gone deeper and it retained that access. It retained that depth. So, you know where you can go, and sometimes you don't go places because you want to protect yourself, in which case you should have good self-knowledge of yourself and you should know if you are protecting yourself. But the main difference between Stella and Lee Strasberg was imagination versus personal life. And Meisner said, you know, the key to the gold is to get it from the other person. Thus, he developed all the series of the repeat exercise. Although I always tell my students that I find that people could work a year, you know, beginning students could work 1 year on, you know, your eyes are blue, my eyes are blue, my eyes are blue, you know, you're pissed off, I'm pissed off, you know, I just moved, and this could go on for a year. And then when it comes time to apply it to text, everything goes out the window. So I love the idea of the repeat. I just do it directly onto the text. I have people repeat the last line and then their line, and I do it just directly on text. But everyone has valuable things to say. You know, everyone does. I think, to me, it's when someone says, this is the only way. The only way scares me. it feels too rigid. And to me, one of the great words that an actor has to have is flexibility. So rigidity is the opposite of flexibility. And I don't believe people should be rigid. They should be open and wanting to try new things.
I agree. And I really love everything you're saying here. You mentioned something about a golden box. Do you want to...
I teach a class called The Golden Box. I can't tell you why I came up with that title, but this happened years ago. When I was teaching it about 20 years ago in my living room, and people were perched on chairs and on the floor taking notes, and I had a little courtyard, I didn't call it The Golden Box. I called it Technique Breakdown. And then it became The Golden Box. And then it became in Spanish, La Casa... La Caja Dorada, and I've taught it. I speak 5 languages fluently. I speak French, obviously, because I was raised in France. I speak Italian, I speak Spanish, and I speak Portuguese. And I've been very lucky to be able to travel all over the world with this class. Last summer I was in Panama, I was in Guatemala, in the fall I was in Istanbul, and now in June, at the end of June, I'm going to go teach it in India. Oh. And in Mumbai, and I'm going to go to Dubai. I have been to Dubai already twice. And it's very interesting. It's been great to take the class internationally. I've gone to South Africa with it, to Johannesburg, to Cape Town. We would have never seen all the places in the world that we ended up seeing. And it's always a journey. It's always an adventure. I mean, wherever we go, it's an adventure. So they invite me to go teach this class. For instance, I've gone to Lima, Peru to teach it. And then I said, well, how are we going to go to Peru and not go to see Cusco and Machu Picchu? We have to go. So then we extended our trip by a week, and I took the kids to Cusco and Machu Picchu. So it's a class that takes us a bit all over the world.
That sounds exciting. Well, people can learn more about this class on your website, right?
Yes, it's a 2-day intensive. And I have found a way to amalgamate a lot in one place. But at the end of it, I think what happens is you can take a script and really have certain tools to script analyze it and to create. I talk a lot about backstory in that class. It's very interactive. I do a lot of exercises. But you know, like a solid in an imaginative way, a creative way of how to build a backstory that really can feed you and you can keep improvising with on set. Because when you build the backstory of the character, even though you've thought about it and, you know, you've conceived certain things about it, it's never done till you're done shooting or till the last show of a run. So you're always investigating, you're always exploring it, you're always fleshing it out. And there's something intricate about how to create this backstory. So that's a lot of what I talk about in the class. And people love the class, I think. Throughout the years, I found a way to, and I keep adding to it and recently, I teach it always differently based on where I'm at. I just added, I was talking about place, you know, that an actor always should ask yourself, why did the author put me in this place? And this is just this last Golden Box that I taught 2 days ago. I added a little clip from along with this movie that Dudley Moore put him on the map called Foul Play with Goldie Hawn, and with Chevy Chase. It's hilarious where he brings her back to his pad and he starts pushing the buttons and he starts to dance, you know. But I mean, I'm constantly... you know, I'm constantly adding to the class and changing. I just finished, and it also depends where I'm at creatively in my life. I am a film director as well, you know, which somebody told me recently that I'm the only, I find that odd, but maybe, I'm the only film director in LA that teaches. There must be others. But I just finished a feature film that I'm in the editing room with. Called Bad Impulse. It's a great script. Could be like one of the episodes of Black Mirror. A supernatural thriller.
Congratulations. That sounds exciting.
Yes, I have a great cast. Sonia Walger, who I don't know if you remember her from Lost, The Catch, The Librarians. She's a great actress. And Grant Bowler, who had his own series. He was the lead, The Defiance. And Paul Sorvino, which of course everybody knows. And Dan Loria, who I've so wanted to work with him. I knew him way, way before the Wonder Years. And I saw him 5 years ago do Lombardi on Broadway, and he was great. He came down to do a part, and I just had a really an extraordinary cast. And so You know, that's very interesting. I love being in the trenches that way and learning that way.
I'm just inspired sitting here listening to you. By the way, we're not in my living room on the couch. We are in Michelle's beautiful, beautiful theater right now as we speak. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can hear the resonance a little bit from where we are. Tell me about your summer camp, Michelle.
We have several classes for summer camps, and people sign up early for them. They have a film component. We've got great teachers that teach them. And the kids, they have different themes. Glee's been very popular. The filmmaking camp's been very popular. Students come together and they collaborate and they write something and they shoot it and they watch it. And, you know, the parents, of course, come the last class to see it. And there's been a lot of different, you know, variations on the syllabus of these great summer camps. But, you know, I mean, we know, me included, you're always looking for, you know, what your children can do to grow, to expand during the summer. And for me, I mean, I think I have one child who's definitely going to be in the arts and another one who's probably not. But he has been taking all the acting camps and he's been growing from it. You know, I think every child can grow from the arts. There's no question about that.
I do, too. You know, I talk to a lot of parents about this, and I think that no matter what path you end up taking in your life, some kind of theater training is a good thing for everybody. It helps you be more confident, more articulate.
Absolutely.
Makes it, right, easier to stand in front of people. And these are huge skills no matter where your life takes you.
And connect.
Yeah.
And be authentic with people. I mean, there's a show right now, you know, that's struck a nerve in American pop culture, and it's This Is Us. I mean, people just love This Is Us because people long to have that authenticity. They long for, people long to connect, and what This Is Us gives people is here, this look, this is how you do it. Mm. And but I think young children, for them to take acting classes at a young age, it also gives them that blueprint. It gives them a map on how they listen and they connect and they can be in the moment. I think it's so important.
I agree. So what do you think are some of the biggest differences between theater versus film and television, and what are some similarities?
I mean, the biggest difference has to do with projection. I think that if you're an actor that's worked a lot in front of the camera, you're just used to the camera coming to get the performance from you. And when you're on stage, you have to send it. And it's a muscle. I saw A Doll's House Part 2, the Broadway show with Laurie Metcalf and Chris Cooper. Love Chris Cooper in so many things, you know, American Beauty, and the list goes on and on. And he was wonderful. Now, she's done tons of theater, so she's much more used to the platform and much more used to opening up her voice without feeling like she's pushing, without feeling like she's theatrical, and sending the ideas. He was very truthful, but he was smaller. She got nominated for a Tony. She won. I believe she won. She did. And not that he didn't give a great, I mean, obviously, you know, it was her play too. But it was really interesting to watch the two of them work, because he was so much more held back, projection-wise. Now, of course, I saw it at the beginning of the run, and maybe after he ran for, you know, the play kept getting extended, because it was very good. So, you know, maybe he adjusted more, mm-hmm. and he took more risks vocally. So that's one of the main, you know, differences. The work in terms of how you're going to break things down, how you're going to build a character, you know, that is very similar. I mean, there was a quote that I had heard years ago that I always loved. It was Walter Matthau, I believe, that said that if you're doing theater, you're playing tennis. Hmm. If you are doing a movie, you are playing ping pong. And if you are doing television, you are playing marbles, which is the level of energy that you're using, you know, to send those ideas, to send the dialogue. I always loved that.
That's a fabulous metaphor, and that's the first time I've heard that. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about auditioning for a minute. It's really its own skill set, and it's obviously a critical one if an actor wants to actually succeed in the business and get roles. What advice do you have for young actors approaching an audition?
I'm a firm believer in training. I think you have to train so that you feel comfortable, because the degree to which you're going to make sides come alive, make circumstances come alive, is the degree to which you're able to be loose, to be free, to let go, and to take chances, and not to be tight. And the way that you're going to achieve that is to have clarity. Clarity about what the scene's about, what's the relationship, what's the obstacle, who are you talking to, what are your physical choices, all of that, that map, you know, all of that blueprint. And that takes practice. It takes practice, especially in front of the camera, because a lot of people tend to freeze up. They get tight. They muscularize. I was just saying, you know, to the class yesterday, it's been great to watch the Olympics. I always loved the Winter Olympics and the Summer Olympics. And to me, it's always the same thing. When the ice skating is so beautiful, but you feel it when people are ice skating because they want to win. They muscularize and they fall. And when you see someone fall, you go, oh my God, because you know what they're feeling inside. And when you see that they're skating because they love skating for the love of it, that's when they win. And, you know, but you know that when you watch the Olympics, it's taken them, the stakes are so, so high because it's taken them all these years of practice and all these hours. And you know, you got to put some of these hours into knowing how to give a good audition and work in front of the camera. So that's really, you know, practice makes perfect, I believe, is a saying. Well, it's a good saying. It's the more you do it so that you can walk in and feel confident. People want to hire young actors that they feel will deliver and won't freeze up.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about that, especially for child actors. You know, it's like being cute is not adequate. You need to know what you're doing. And the only way to know what you're doing is to practice.
Well, yes, because they spend a lot of time on set setting up the shot, and then everything goes quickly. Everybody has to deliver. Actors have to be ready. You've got to work fast. So, you know, you want the actors that not only are talented, but the ones that have done the work and have, like Stella used to say, the talent for the talent. And, you know, people get breaks. Look at all those young actors from Stranger Things, and now they're huge. You know, they, I don't know how their auditions were, but if there was a way to find how they auditioned for it and what they did, you know, the more someone studies, the more you study, the more you research, and then the more you do, the more you're ahead of the game.
I agree. And that applies to pretty much everything, and acting is not different. You have extensive experience coaching actors who audition for a really wide range of projects. Are there any differences in how you would approach an audition for, say, a Disney show versus one for, like, a TV drama or film?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, like I said, it's part of the, you know, there's no cookie cutter, you know, way to work. It depends. You know, if you come and you're working on a Broadway show, it's different than if you're working on a WB show or a Disney show or a Netflix show. And also the genre is also different, obviously, you know, especially nowadays. I was just watching this new hospital show, The Resident, you know. How do you compare that to, like, a Grey's Anatomy or, you know, a Code Black or the difference between Homeland, which I love, and The Blacklist, and, you know. Absolutely, there's a lot of difference, and first of all, it's the big difference to me is understanding the world of the show. It's understanding the genre. Even when you have comedies, if you have Kimmy Schmidt versus Jane the Virgin versus, let me think, or Modern Family, you know, those are all comedies, but there's different, you know, one is more quirky, one is more stylized. You know, you really have to understand the music of the writing, the music of the show. And when you walk in and you show them that you understand the tone of the show, that makes people have confidence in you and want to hire you because they go, oh, they understand what this beast is.
Yep, yep, that makes sense. I like the way you called it music. Mm-hmm. I was thinking rhythm, but music is so much nicer. any special advice for audition self-tapes? Now, this is obviously an important skill for all actors, but especially ones who don't live in the LA area.
Yes, again, I think that if you work a lot and are constantly acting, even if you're not in LA, wherever you are in the world, if you're just constantly using your muscles, your instrument, and you're constantly doing it, you're having an affinity, you know, your instrument. I just know, you know, recently with this movie that I just did, the actors that came on set, the ones that were rusty, I didn't have that many because I casted really well. And then the actors that were just, you know, they were just warmed up, they were ready to go. And if you are particularly the actor that, you know, you're not in LA, so you're not constantly in the trenches, you know, find wherever you are, you know, if you're in the middle of Missouri or, you know, middle America, you know, find an acting class. Keep taping yourself, even if, you know, it's not a self-tape that you're sending in. Even if you're not putting your hat on the ring, practice all the time in front of the camera so that you're not rusty, so that you're alive. You know, the most important thing is that you should get out of your head, that you should not give a reading that should be, you know, mental, that you should be in your body, you should not be a talking head, you should be physical. You know, it's just interesting, it's actors that just come to, you know, are just alive. There's an aliveness to it. It's visceral. I'm just flashing to an actor that I just had on set in my movie, and he was just really a good actor. I want to give him a shout out, but I mean, and my music supervisor came to look at the cut because he's looking for music, and he said, out of all the actors, he went, that actor. Why did he say that actor as opposed to the other actors in my movie? They were very good, but there was one that took it off of the, he just jumped. There was something about it, and I really have to tell you, I think it's the aliveness. He was more alive than anyone else. That's what it was. Mm. He was more alive. Stakes were higher. That's what made him different.
I love that. How can an actor cultivate that in themselves?
Just, you know, by doing it. There's no other prescription.
And no shortcuts.
No, you just got to do it. I mean, I said it, you know. Also, this weekend, I said a lot of things this weekend when I was teaching, but I said, you know, for me as an artist, listen, of course everybody wants to be successful, but, you know, it's not so important. The truth is that it's not so, it should be more important for me, but it's not. I'm more interested in the journey. I'm more interested in the process than, you know, the accolades. I'm more interested in the discovery of it. So be really interested in, you know, the ride. The ride is what's the joyful part of it. Mm. I love, there's something that Al Pacino said, you know, I never audition, I only act. Which was, you detach, it's not about the outcome, it's not about getting it, it's about the experience of doing it.
That's gorgeous. Yeah. That's gorgeous. Thank you. So let's talk about pilot season for a minute. There's a lot of anxiety about it in general. Thousands of people come out to LA every year between January and March or April, but more and more shows are being cast year-round, never mind the fact that movies are cast year-round anyway. What are your current thoughts about pilot season?
You know, I mean, some people may disagree with me. I think pilot season has never been the same since that writer's strike. When was that, in 2009 or something?
Whenever reality TV stepped in.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that it was so busy with pilot season. And it was like clockwork every year. It's not the same. I think it's extended a little bit past April and in little drips. But it is. It gets cast all year around. And so, you know, you have to not only hope that you have the agent and the manager that puts your hat in the ring for the things that you're right for, but also you have to be proactive, and you have to try and find out what they're casting, where they're casting it, if there's something that you're right for, and try and find a way in.
Do what it takes. Now, you've inevitably dealt with a lot of parents through your work coaching young actors. Do you have any advice for parents who are trying to help their young actors succeed in this business?
Yes.
this is your opportunity.
Don't put pressure on them. Even I, who try to not put pressure on, you know, I'm really thinking of my 15-year-old because he's mostly the one that's into the arts. You know, I think I do a little bit of that. I think it's hard to not put pressure on your child because you as the adult, the wiser person, see things that, you know, your children don't see. So you so much want to speak. And, you know, sometimes you just got to let them learn it because if they don't fall, you know, they don't learn it. And for 100 no's, there could be a yes. You know, it could be 200 no's. I just went through the thing with my child who pitched the project at a school against 10 other people. And I was trying to prepare him for the rejection. You know, I said, you know, you're prepared, right? It's, you know, possible that it could not happen. And then he didn't call me all day. And I thought, well, okay, so it didn't happen. I thought, but you know what? He's got to learn sooner or later because that's reality. That's real life. And then he walked in and he got it. They picked him. So then I said to myself, I was very happy for him, but I said to myself, next time. The lesson will come next time. The lesson will come. You know, yes, if you get it, you should. Of course you should be excited. But if you don't get it, you shouldn't hit rock bottom either. It's the same thing almost, you know what I mean by that. It's not, you know, don't go all the way up and don't go all the way down. So it's, I think it's the pressure, you know, there's a lot of invisible stage mothers and fathers that want their children and live vicariously through their children so much they want them to succeed. Not that they shouldn't, of course, that they, you know, give them an obstacle and, let them, you know, give them the opportunities, drive them to the auditions, help them, facilitate the coaching, facilitate whatever needs be, but help them to detach from the outcome.
That's nice. That's nice. And the outcome is theirs. It's not yours, too. I have a lot of parents tell me that, that they can see that they feel more upset when things don't go well for their children than their children do. And it's absolutely like, don't do that to yourself.
That's right. Your child is not an extension of you, you know. Of course, exactly. You want them to do well, but it's all right. It's okay.
It is okay. So what about the kids themselves? I get asked pretty much daily what someone can do to break into the business. What would your advice be for maybe a 12-year-old kid who lives far away from L.A. or New York? What do you think are some of the best ways for them to move toward their dream just right where they are?
Okay. Well, first of all, get a craft. And the good news these days about that is you don't necessarily have to be in L.A. to become a good actor, only because there is a lot of online tutoring that can happen. People can, you know, I mean, my niece was getting tutored for these college applications and everything. The person she was Skyping with was not in New York City. They were somewhere else. People can get coached by people all over the world. So that's the great news. You don't have to be in L.A. I mean, yes, if you're in L.A., you're going to go to a class and that'll be that. But if you're not in L.A., then you can do things online. You can read a lot of books in whatever city you're in the United States. You can find the acting class to go to. Get craft, because without craft, you are a dilettante. Without craft, you can't be taken seriously and inspire confidence that you can do it. So that would be the first thing. And then the second thing is, at some point, you're going to have to move to L.A. You're going to have that vision. Jennifer Lawrence, you know, told her mother she wanted to go to New York, you know, and then she landed those little parts in the TV shows, in Medium and Monk, and then she did the independent movie, and then she was nominated for Best Actress at the film festivals, and from there came the Oscar nomination. In other words, there's stepping stones, there's a trajectory. So study the actors that inspire you, study the trajectory of the, you know, the kids and the series that you love, and see those are the stepping stones that you'll have to take to get to that place that you want to be at.
That's wonderful advice. Thank you. Any final thoughts for young actors or parents of young actors that are hoping to make a career in film or TV?
Well, depending on, you know, what your means are, or this idea on the path of being proactive, the more you can meet directors and producers and writers, as opposed to just waiting for the phone to ring, you know, that old, let's wait for the phone to ring, for the agent to call, for the manager to call. You find a more proactive way of really finding out and reading. If there was a book that you read, A Wrinkle in Time, and you go, there's a perfect part for my child, where are they casting it? Who's doing it? Who's the director? What's the production office? And you send in, you know, your child's picture and their demo reel. You know, that kind of proactive movement is very helpful. Another, you know, a step up to that proactiveness would be to find a screenplay that would have a perfect part for your child, and to find a way to maybe shoot it. There's something today about technology that's so extraordinary. I find it extraordinary. People have shot, you know, movies on their phones because it's 4K. They've bought these lenses. People can get 4K cameras for literally $600. I mean, there's so many. Of course, you have to find someone that shoots it well and lights it well. But there's so many things that can be done that you can do. You know, you don't have to wait for someone to say yes to you. You can say yes to yourself first and do it, and people take note. So it's, you know, it's a constant work. I mean, I'm not going to say it's easy, but there's other professions that are not easy as well. Nothing is easy that's worthwhile in life. But, just if you have a dream, you know, trust that, you know, there are steps, there are things that you can do proactively to make that dream come through.
I love that. What a beautiful note to end on. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So for everybody who wants to follow Michelle now, here are the different ways to find her. Her website is www.michelledanner.com. Her Twitter is @actingatedgemart, Instagram @MichelleDannerLA, and Facebook is a long one, but it makes it easy to find and identify, Michelle Danner Los Angeles Acting School. Thank you, Michelle. I so appreciate your taking the time.
No, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you enjoy this podcast, subscribe. Go to BonnieJWallace.com and sign up on the podcast page to get exclusive, inspirational stories and insider info sent to your inbox every week. If you need help figuring out just how to navigate the career of a young actor, buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. And for one-on-one coaching that can save you literally thousands of dollars and months and years of wasted time, book an hour consultation with me over Skype or in LA. Just go to BonnieJWallace.com and click on the consultation page. For about the same price of an hour with an acting coach, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Thanks. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.